Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Justin Chekai, who's serving as our worship associate, Karen Labracco, our interim director of religious education, and Hal Walker, our music director. If you have a joy, sorrow, or milestone to share during today's service, I encourage you to complete one of the caring cards that you can find in the racks in the pews. We will share those cards later in the service, and they'll be collected during the opening hymn. Let us let go. Let go of worry. Let go of anxiety. Let go of the to-do list. Let go of all of your fears and concerns, knowing if you need to, you can pick them back up when you're done. But for this hour, let us let go and rest in Sabbath. We light our chalice in gratitude for the opportunity for rest.
Just keep going on, just keep going on and on, just keep going on. Take every knock as a boost, and every stumbling block as a stepping stone. Lift up your head, hold your own, just keep going on. Just keep going on, just keep going on. Just keep going on and on, just keep going on. Take every knock as a boost, and every stumbling block as a stepping stone. Lift up your head, hold your own, just keep going on. I say to every young woman, and also every young man, sometimes you get discouraged, don't stop to wring your hands. Your privilege cannot be taken, your rights cannot be banned. If someone like me can make it, I know you can. So just keep going on, just keep going on, just keep going on and on, just keep going on. Take every knock as a boost, and every stumbling block as a stepping stone. Lift up your head, hold your own. Just keep going on.
Everybody.
Just keep going on. Just keep going on. Just keep going on and on. Just keep going on. Take every knock as a boost, and every stumbling block as a stepping stone. Lift up your head. Hold your own. Just keep
So I have a very relevant story for this service. I volunteer for a nonprofit organization, and each year we put on a festival to help raise awareness about protecting and improving water quality. We start the planning and working on the festival over the course of the entire year. So once 1 year's festival is over, we immediately begin planning the next one. We spend hours and hours planning and executing. We have vendors, exhibitors, live animals, and workshops, something really for all ages. And it's a great event. And we measure our success by the number of people that we reach. Well, yes, this year's festival was yesterday. So unless you try to hide in your basement, you know that it was miserable. And we're talking 41 degrees and raining miserable. So for the first time in 10 years, we had to cancel the festival. So I was pretty devastated, you know, thinking about all the time, the expense, and the effort that went into it, you know, and it was all for naught. But you know, it's funny. Later that morning, while I was playing with my kids during my newly found free time, my son William, who is 8 months old, got up on his little butt, then bent over into a four-point stance, and he started crawling for the first time. As a father who relishes his children's first, I shouldn't have been there for this one. So I guess it just serves as a reminder that life goes on no matter what. We can get upset and anxious when the unexpected ruins our day, or we could choose to go with the flow of life and see where it takes us. Sometimes it might just lead to a most wonderful experience.
This month at church, we'll be talking about letting go. And in the course of our lives, we may find that there are lots of things that we want to let go of. We might want to let go of feelings of grief or loss, like Dave will be talking about next week. Or we might want to let go of our desire to try and control the events of life, like I'll be talking about today. And sometimes we may find that we wish to let go of our anxiety or our stress. And there are different practices that can help us do that. One of those practices is yoga. Yoga is a body practice, starts as a body practice. It's also a spiritual practice. And there is a very simple posture in yoga that is about letting go. So I'd like to share it with you. If you can make fists with your hands, just do that right now. If you can make a fist. And if it's too hard for you to make a fist, if you have arthritis or some other reason that it's hard to make a fist, you might just tighten your shoulders up around your neck, because sometimes we walk around like that when we're stressed out, right? Okay, so relax your body again now and call to your mind something that stresses you out, that you get stressed out about or that you feel anxiety about. And then when you have that in your mind, go ahead and make fists or lift up your shoulders. And hold that event, that thing that stresses you out in your mind, and let your fists get tighter or your shoulders get tighter. If you have fingernails, you might even dig your fingernails into your hand a little bit so you can just feel yourself all clenched up. And now take a deep breath. And as you let it out, very slowly start to release your muscles. Like you're releasing in slow motion. And keep breathing, breathing in, breathing out. Release your muscles. Notice how it feels to let go. Let's try it again. See if you have any tension remaining, and if you do, bring it back into a fist. Or back into tightened shoulders. And then remember, you just experienced what it was like to let go, and you can do it again. So take a deep breath. And then as you exhale, practice letting go. Slowly, slowly, release your muscles. And notice how free your hands feel now. Notice the movement in your shoulders if you were tightening your shoulders. That freedom you feel in your body, you can feel in your spirit too. So this is a practice you can take with you. The next time you notice yourself getting stressed out or anxious, you can use this body practice to help train your mind and your spirit to let go. So there are a variety of opportunities we offer in this congregation for people to explore their thoughts and feelings and to explore the movements of the Spirit. And one of those is our small group conversation program, Chalice Groups and Food for Thought Groups. And since today is the last day to sign up for that too, we've invited Gene Weninger to share with you a few thoughts about his experience participating in this group for the last few years.
I think most of you know what chalice groups are by now, I hope. They vary. Actually, Cheryl and I belong to two at the moment. We've been in the church-based one for about the last 3 or 4 years, and then we just moved into a retirement community, which also has a chalice group. The differences are interesting. Church-based one is all active members of this congregation. The retirement community one is an eclectic bunch. Some active Unitarians from here, some former Unitarians, some non-Unitarians. We even have a former Catholic priest who has joined us recently and is very enlightened, very much in tune with Pope Francis. So it's interesting. The groups vary. One method is to move around, have a variety of hosts, move from home to home over the course of the year. The other one is place-bound. So the one we have here moves around. The one over there obviously is based there, so it stays there. That one operates year-round, whereas the ones based here primarily operate from either September, October, till May. Some of them involve couples. The group we belong to here is all couples. The one over the retirement community, some couples, some individuals, some aliens, you name it. Reason occurred to me, one good analogy, is in many church activities you can be either an active or a passive participant. And while people like me very much enjoy the music program, I'm sure those who actively take part in it have a different experience and grow at a greater rate than those of us who enjoy it sitting. Likewise with our worship services, those who take part obviously benefit and grow at a faster rate than those of us who sit here taking it in. Hopefully we're still growing, but I don't think you grow at quite the same rate. So the value of the Chalice Group is that you'd explore the themes of the month or other themes in small groups more deeply, more intensively, and grow your spirituality or religiousness, I think, at a faster rate. Today, incidentally, is the last day to sign up for Chalice Groups, so immediately after this, I expect a stampede down the stairs to...
And to give you a taste, if you haven't participated, I chose our wisdom words this morning from the packet of materials that are available. We have a packet every month for our Chalice Groups and Food for Thought Groups to explore the themes of the service. And I chose our wisdom words this morning from that packet of materials. And I have a confession to make, and I'm going to blame this on being a new parent. I didn't print it. Hal is going to give us a brief musical interlude, and Justin's going to give me a cell phone. You know I haven't done that in a long, long time. So this is called Let It Go. And as we prepare to enter into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, I invite you to consider these words from Dana Falls. Let go of the ways you thought life would unfold, the holding of plans or dreams or expectations. Let it all go. Save your strength to swim with the tide. The choice to fight what is here before you now will only result in struggle, fear, and desperate attempts to flee from the very energy you long for. Let it go. Let it go. Let it all go and flow with the grace that washes through your days, whether you received it gently or with all your quills raised to defend against invaders. Take this on faith. The mind may never find the explanations that it seeks, but you will move forward nonetheless. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores beyond your wildest dreams and expectations. Let it all go, and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation. And now, surrounded by the sounds of our community, we'll keep silence for a few moments together.
Thank you.
Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize with those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those who need our love and support. This morning, we all come with sorrow for the lives that were lost in another mass shooting this week. We pray for those who have survived and are facing now their grief. Dan Hayes shares a sorrow this morning. His brother has cancer, and a friend of his has undergone treatment for breast cancer. We pray for healing. And Claudia Miller shares a concern for her brother-in-law, Roy Baker, who's in recovery from surgery for a broken hip, which happened last week while he was visiting from New Jersey, and also thoughts for her sister, Leslie Baker, healing for Roy, too, and support for Leslie as they go through this recovery. And Saul Flanner and Kathy Walker celebrate their joy today. Their anniversary is tomorrow. They've been married for 19 years and together for 24. And we share their joy with them and join them in celebration. For all of the names which have been spoken and those that you have held in the sanctuary of our hearts, we give our grateful thanks. And I invite you to join with me now in a prayer for peace after another mass shooting. The news tells us that more people in the United States have died in the last year from mass shootings than from terrorist activity. These stories come again and again with all too startling frequency. And as a nation, we've remained immobilized. We know that there is another way. And so we pray this morning for the moral imagination, the strength of will, and the courage to act. Bright minds, powerful people, ordinary citizens together speaking our hearts can make a change so that we can truly say no more. No more random gun violence on campuses and movie theaters. No more bereaved parents and spouses and children. We can find another way. So let us take a deep breath and find the courage to take whatever small actions we can take to tip the balance. Amen.
A glove in the subway. A one-paragraph newspaper article describes a subway platform during the morning rush hour at Grand Central Terminal. The train pulls in. A well-dressed man gets off. Before the doors close, the man realizes he is holding only one of his leather gloves. He looks back at the train and spots the matching glove on a seat. It is obviously too late to dash back and retrieve it. So, with a cavalier shrug, he flings his arm out. The door's about to close, tosses his one glove onto the seat alongside its mate. The door shut, and the train pulls away. What a great image. One could use it, I suppose, as a metaphor for facing the inevitable, or arguing for an orderly universe, or even, with a little stretch, for sharing the good things in life. But as we move deeper into fall, the metaphor that comes to mind is one of letting go. To throw a favorite leather glove into the oblivion of a moving train must involve small pangs of uncertainty, pangs of some degree of loss, pangs of upset. After a lifetime of struggling not to lose our mittens and then our gloves, cavalier abandonment does not come easy. We need a vigorous and decisive toss about now to free ourselves of the confining gloves of life, even if we love them. The train is about to leave.
It was a Friday afternoon when I first started feeling strange. I had to go to the hospital anyway because I was going to visit a member, so I called my midwife's office and they told me to stop by. It was convenient. They thought it was strange enough that I should have an ultrasound that night, 8 o'clock, but I had a congregational meeting to go to. My spouse insisted that the ultrasound was more important. So to the hospital I went for an ultrasound, where the technician assured us that everything was just fine. So I went on about my business, and that involved a lot of church that weekend, various obligations and responsibilities, and all seemed well. On Monday, I started feeling strange again and called the midwife, and she said, "Let's see if it changes." As midnight approached, it was clearly changing, so we packed up our sleeping toddler into the car and went off to the hospital, where my spouse dropped me off, figuring that I'd probably be staying for observation, at least for a few hours. A nurse came with me into a room in labor and delivery. This wasn't a good sign. And said she was going to give me a test to see if I was likely to deliver anytime within the next 2 weeks, and that this test was highly accurate. Well, she'd scarcely begun when she said, "Your baby's coming now." "No," I said. And the next thing I know, there is a swirl of people in the room, nurses, the midwife, a doctor I've never met before. "Your baby's coming now." "No," I said, "that's too soon. It's too soon. The baby can't come now." She tried to calm me down, the midwife did. She said, "You're 32 weeks." "No, I'm not. I'm 31 weeks and 2 days." "You have to calm down. The baby's coming. Call Evan, your spouse, and tell her to come back." Someone handed me a phone. "It's too soon. You have to make it stop," I pleaded. "Give me drugs to make the labor stop. I had read that this was possible." She said, "It's too late. The baby is coming. It's too late. There's not enough time for those drugs to be effective." I called Evan and told her. They said, "The baby's coming back." But I still wasn't really accepting this reality, so I said, "Well, what about steroids?" I had read this too. "You can give me steroids to help the baby's lungs mature." She said, "It's too late. The baby is coming very soon." It was hard for me to accept this. I kept protesting, but realized there was nothing to be done. "It's too late," they said. "But I should go to Akron Children's for the high-risk delivery." She said, "There's no time to transfer you. They're on their way here." What do you do? Protest is what I did all the way through, until suddenly here was a baby, and he was whisked away, and Evan arrived 5 minutes after he was born. "Go with the baby," I told her, and so she did, and there I was, all by myself, suddenly not pregnant. It was a little while when Evan and the respiratory therapist and the neonatal intensive care emergency people came back with this tiny, tiny baby strapped to a gurney in a portable incubator to tell me that they were transferring him to Akron Children's neonatal intensive care unit. And they handed me a little doll that I should hold to put my scent on. And then they were gone, and I was alone. What just happened? I couldn't make any sense of it. It was 2 hours, less than 2 hours, an hour and 50 minutes from the time I arrived at the hospital to the time the baby was born. So, what do I do? I figured I needed to prepare for a very different reality than I had anticipated, but I had no idea how to do that. The only thing I could think of was, I have to cancel my appointments. So there I was with a cell phone in a hospital bed at 4 a.m. writing emails. I will not be able to come to this meeting. I'm sorry to tell you. And more emails. I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to attend that meeting either. And emails to the office to tell our administrator, these are all the things that must be done. It's the only thing I could think to do. And finally, just before dawn, I fell into a very brief rest. Sometimes life does not unfold according to our plans, and we have to let go of what it is we have anticipated to face a very different reality. Ralph Waldo Emerson, Unitarian of the 19th century, famously advised a class of young preachers at Harvard Divinity School that they should offer the people their lives delivered through the fire of thought. So how could I speak to you today about letting go and not talk about this experience? It's easier now that I'm on the other side of it and our son Owen is home and doing well. Still, everything about his birth and the weeks that followed were a crash course in remembering that life so often does not unfold according to our plans. This truth can be hard to hold on to an ordinary day. After all, most ordinary days unfold pretty much like we think they will. We figure that we'll eat breakfast and lunch and dinner. We figure that we'll go to work or school or grocery shopping. We'll make an important phone call, check our email, maybe at the end of the day, sit down to watch a television show. And a lot of days go kind of like that. They unfold a lot like we think that they will. And this happens frequently enough that we can be tempted to overestimate our power to direct the course of our affairs. We start thinking that we are in charge of our lives. And this works well enough on an ordinary day. But in every single life, there comes a day that is not ordinary, a day when we are reminded that we are not in control. The Christian minister Barbara Brown Taylor also wrote a sermon on this subject. This is an excerpt from what she has to say. Eventually something happens. The income evaporates. The doctor finds a spot on the x-ray. The child's grades go down and down. I've lost control. That's what good people say when bad things happen. I've lost control of my life. I've said it myself. But it's not true. Human beings do not lose control of their lives. What we lose is the illusion that we were ever in control in the first place. And it's a hard, hard lesson to learn. I couldn't agree with her more. Random events unfold in our lives all the time that we couldn't have predicted and can't control. Our emotional reaction to that randomness runs the gamut. Sometimes it's joy. It's joyful when a festival gets canceled and suddenly a father gets to witness his baby crawling for the first time unexpectedly. And it's tragic when a person is left bereaved because someone they loved was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. When something like that happens, how are we supposed to open up and surrender to the way that it is? Well, I would say first, there's some discernment to do. That famous serenity prayer from Reinhold Niebuhr asks, God, grant me the serenity to accept those things I cannot change, the courage to change those things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So we have to begin with wisdom, discernment, to find the wisdom to know the difference. Can we make a change here? Maybe. We can advocate for gun control laws. That's something we can do, for example. But sometimes there really isn't anything. Nothing we could have done or can do will change the outcome of a baby born 9 weeks too soon, unexpectedly. So when there's nothing to do but find the serenity to accept, to let go of the plans that we had and find the serenity to accept the way that things are, to surrender to what is, how do we do that? I can't tell you for sure because the answers are really personal. And what works for one person might not work for another. I'm very aware that there is no clear 5-point step to serenity, to accepting the way things are. But what I am aware of is the spiritual work involved in accepting our place in the universe. And I think that that's a good place to start. The poet and minister Lynn Unger makes it so plain. The universe does not revolve around you, she says. The stars and planets spinning through the ballroom of space dance with one another quite outside of your small life. You cannot hold gravity or seasons. Even air and water inevitably evade our grasp. So why not then let go? Why not? Well, because it can be terrifying to let go, and not what we had in mind by any stretch of the imagination. But in the end, the truth is that we really don't have any other good choices. We can cling to the illusion of control and rail against the unfairness of life, making a shrine of our anger and grief. We can do that. You might have done that. I've done that, and I know people who have. But that's no way to live. Instead, I think we have to find a way to surrender to what is and summons the courage it takes to move through it to what may yet be. That's easier said than done. After I got over the shock of finding myself in the NICU with a premature baby, I started thinking that I was going to be one of those people who accepted this gracefully. I was going to be one of those people who's always cheerful and kind and patient with the doctors and nurses because they have hard jobs. I know that. And very rarely I've met people who are always, it seems like they encounter, they're in these difficult medical circumstances and they're always cheerful and kind and patient. And I thought, I'm going to be that. I'm going to be that kind of person. And I'm going to be the kind of person who adapts to these new circumstances with grace. I wanted to be accepting of the way that it was. Instead, I found myself ordering books and spending hours hunting online trying to figure out what happened, why did this happen, as though knowing that would somehow change the outcome. It wouldn't. It didn't. And without enough sleep and afraid of all I didn't and couldn't know, the truth is I was not always patient. And with my life turned completely upside down, I found it difficult to maintain a cheerful demeanor. I can't say that I was the model of letting go of the illusion of control. But eventually, I realized I didn't have any other choice. And so I began to let go. What helped me? What helped me was the kindness of friends and the ministry of some of my colleagues. What helped me was the practice of prayer and the many, many hours spent praying while holding that tiny, tiny, fragile baby of mine. What helped me was the testimony of others who had traveled a similar road. And what helped me was the embrace of love that reminded me, no matter what happened, I didn't have to face it alone. In one of his poems, Rainer Maria Rilke imagines God speaking to us as we are born. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. Don't let yourself lose me. You could say that differently. Don't let yourself lose the spirit of life. Don't let yourself lose the spirit of love. Don't let yourself lose faith in your ability to assign meaning and create purpose in your life. Don't let yourself lose track of your ability to listen for the still small voice inside. Life is sacred no matter what. With that sure knowledge, we can find our way through whatever comes. And chances are good, chances are great even, that on the other side, we will find blessing once again. Amen. Once each month, we take a special collection for an organization whose efforts we would like to support. Our special offering this month will go to support the educational efforts and voter outreach of Kent Citizens for Democracy. This local group carried out a successful grassroots campaign to put a proposed amendment on the city charter in Kent on the November ballot. The proposed amendment would require Kent to hold an annual Democracy Day public hearing about corporate influence in the United States political system. It would also require the city to inform Congress each year that voters here say that corporations are not people and money is not speech. You can read more about it in the thread from the web. We recognize that not everyone in this congregation agrees with the proposed charter amendment, and yet a significant number, more than a majority, of church members and friends have told us that they strongly support this grassroots voter effort out of their Unitarian Universalist values and their commitment for social justice. And so this is an opportunity for those who wish to support the work of Kent Citizens for Democracy. All of our undesignated offering will go to support their work. Last week, you had the opportunity to celebrate with us as we kicked off our capital campaign to renew and expand our space. We invited one of the people who was an early donor to that campaign to share with us a few words this morning about their decision to help make this dream a reality. Mary Ann Stevens has a few words to share.
Okay. Thanks, Melissa. I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to share with you why I, along with my husband, became an early donor to our capital campaign. First, I'll just talk about what the church means to me, and then second of all, why we made that decision. I guess I could just sum up in two words what the church has done for me, and it's helped offer my life meaning and purpose. The church has been a source of personal nourishment and spiritual growth in ways I never dreamed possible. The church has provided me a community of caring and loving people and a sense of belonging that is truly important to me. Beyond the walls of the church, the church offers me a platform and programs through which I think I can make a bigger difference by working through the church than anything that I could do alone. I'm particularly interested in issues of racial justice, and as you know, what we've been doing here lately is really a forum that I really embrace and have found very meaningful. And then I guess the other part is by all of us working together, we leave a larger social footprint than any of us could do by ourselves. So for all those reasons, this is a very special place, a very special group of people, and a set of programs. And what I know is that by expanding our space, we also expand our opportunities to grow, to expand to the community, to share, and to make a difference in ways that are harder as we're more constricted in space. So why did we just make the decision to contribute early? Really, it's mostly because we've watched over the last several years as plans have been made, as consultants have been sought, as communications have taken place, as input has been carefully thought through. So the plans themselves seem very reasonable, but probably more than that, the people who have been making those plans are people that we believe, Jack and I, believe can really make things happen. So to the extent that we have the resources, I really believe that all of the dreams that have been laid before us are intensely possible, and I sincerely hope that everyone will find some way to make contributions to these plans. I have volunteered for the first time in my life, I must say, to be a visiting steward, and I feel very, very comfortable in doing so. So thanks very much, and I hope everybody will find ways that you can, in ways that are appropriate for you, give to the Capital campaign.
We have gathered in dedication to the proposition that beneath all of our diversity there lies a unity which binds us one to the other, to the earth and to the stars. We've gathered in witness. Let us take our witness out into the world. Go in peace.